is gentle, faithful, swift, passionate, blind, and wondrous. All these are faces of love. In a moment, young Kate Wakefield, venturing into today's world of confusing freedoms, brought to you by Natural Wear Miss Clairol, to know you're the best you can be.
Come in, Jessie. I was just packing my bag.
Ah, so you're leaving us, eh?
Well, I've got to get back to my job.
And it's a good thing.
Why, Jessie, are you on my side?
Ah, it's not a matter of sides. This house is too big and too empty, and you're too young to be in it.
You didn't say that to Isabel.
Oh, she knows it. I think she wanted you home because she wanted you. But I think she's seen in the last few days that it's not the place for you.
Oh, Jessie, do you think she's going to want to stay?
Yes, I do. She's had all the giddy scampering around the world she wants. I think she's at that time of her life when she wants home. Now, don't you worry. We have a lot of plans for this house, Miss Isabel and I.
Well, I'll come home any time you want me.
But you won't. Until you come with a fine man and the light in your eyes. I thought you had it when you arrived.
Jessie, you are just too romantic.
Oh, that I am not. But I know who telephones to this house and who doesn't. He's a real man, that Mr. Cushing.
Uh-huh. You always get to your point sooner or later.
Oh, well, more ways of cooking a pudding than burning the pot.
Well, Jessie, Mr. Tony Cushing is married.
So I've heard tell.
I thought you'd be shocked.
Oh, if the mistakes people make shocked me, I'd be dead and in my grave long ago. Now, if Mr. Cushing's wife was taking proper care of him, he wouldn't have the time nor the will to go running around the corner calling Bellhaven. Now, would he?
His wife won't live with him, and she won't give him a divorce.
Well, I'll make no judgment on someone I don't know, but I've met Mr. Cushing.
You always did like him, Jessie.
It's you, Kate. You've been brought up to think right. You wouldn't be feeling this way in your heart if it was wrong.
Oh, Jessie, I'm just so mixed up right now.
Well, why wouldn't you be? Everybody pulling you this way and that. Unless the devil's addled my own wits, I think your Tony Cushing is a bonny man. But, Kate, he must untangle his own skein.
I know that. Oh, Jessie, I want to show you something. You remember that little package that came Christmas Eve?
Didn't I open the door for it?
Well, I'm taking it back to the city, but I want you to look at it. Look.
Oh, bless my soul.
Jessie, it's a 3-carat diamond on a chain to wear around my neck.
Oh, it's as big as a shoe button. Oh, I don't know, Kate.
Well, I do. I'm giving it back to him as soon as I get into the city.
That's right, Kate. But it's a puzzle. He didn't seem the man to be giving fancy trinkets to a girl like you.
Here, I'll put it back in my bag.
My Sam gave me nothing more than a lacy handkerchief until the day he put the gold ring on my finger. Well, it's a different world now.
Not all that different, Jessie. Or maybe I just haven't learned how to live in it yet.
Who in the world?
Oh, well, I'll go get it.
Oh, knocking and ringing both. Somebody must be anxious.
Coming.
Good morning, Kate.
Oh.
Good morning.
Stephen Wolf.
I hope I haven't startled you. May I come in?
Well, I'm sorry. I was just leaving for the station.
Then I got here just in time. Did you have a pleasant holiday?
Yes, I did.
I spent mine with some friends in Centerville, and being so near, I thought I'd drop in to see you.
Well, I really haven't got time to talk, Stephen.
Are you on your way to the city?
Yes.
I'll drive you there. That will give us plenty of time.
I've made my arrangements, thank you.
I'm sure, but I've also made mine. You disappeared rather quickly after our last talk.
I was away.
You went up to Gull Island.
How did you know that?
My dear girl, I make it my business to know that. After all, our destinies are rather closely tied together.
I don't know.
Of course you do know. Now, I know enough about your late husband and about you to make things very unpleasant for you. You can't ignore me.
But you'd have to prove it, wouldn't you?
Not necessarily. Just the story itself could make things very uncomfortable.
That's where you're wrong, Stephen. I've learned to live with it now. That Tom was not only on drugs, but he was part of a smuggling ring. Now, it was ugly and it was criminal, but it's over. Tom is dead and it has nothing to do with me.
Something's changed you.
I'm just not running so scared now.
And suppose I told this little story to Tony Cushing?
I've already told him.
You have?
Yes. He said I must forget it, as he would.
Oh, Kate, you surprise me.
Perhaps.
You don't know, Tony.
Excuse me, Kate.
Yes, Jesse.
Mrs. Isabel isn't back, so Harry will drive you to the station.
Oh, thank you. I'm all ready.
Now listen, Kate, I won't be treated like this. I want the information Tom promised he'd leave for me.
Well, why didn't you say so, Stephen?
You have it?
I found a letter at Gull Island for you from Tom.
You did? Then let me have it.
When I get back to the city, Stephen. Now, if you'll excuse me...
Don't put me off, Kate. I haven't much patience left.
No, Mrs. Cushing, I'm sorry. He hasn't come in yet. Yes, of course I'll tell him. He has a luncheon engagement. No, Mrs. Cushing, with Mr. Fletcher, the boss. Cocktails at your hotel? I'll tell Mr. Cushing goodbye.
Good morning, Gloria.
Glad to see you, Chief. The phone's been hot.
Yes, I'm sure of it. I had breakfast with a client. He wanted to talk. Did you get that information?
Oh, yes. Want it now or later?
Now, of course.
Mrs. Wakefield will be back at work tomorrow, says Ross Real Estate. And she has already left Belhaven for the city, said a marvelous old Scottish lady.
That's Mrs. Jessup. You should meet her.
When I said I was calling for you, she didn't exactly bubble over.
But Gloria, you must realize in the eyes of Belhaven, I'm a married man. And if I should turn up there, I could be tarred and feathered.
I'm glad there's a place like that left.
Hey, now, which team are you pitching for?
Yours. And if I may make a personal remark, Mr. Cushing, your only trouble is that you're too decent to everybody.
Thank you for the vote.
And while we're on the subject, you really should let me do your Christmas shopping for you next year.
Why?
You're wildly extravagant.
Why, I enjoy it.
You must. That little enameled watch you gave me honestly broke me up.
As long as you liked it.
I'll bet there isn't a secretary in New York that got a present like that from her boss. As they say, you shouldn't have.
Oh, well, Gloria, I don't have a family. Claire's always picked out her own presents without even asking me. I like to buy things. I like to give things at this time of the year. I guess I'm kind of soft on it. And if I'm extravagant, what the hell else am I making all this money for?
All I can say is thanks.
My thanks to you, Gloria. Now, I have one memo to dictate, then I'm going to meet Kate at the station and take her to lunch.
Incidentally, Mrs. Cushing called.
Again?
Again. And you have a lunch date with your boss.
Oh, Lord. Would you call him and tell him...
You call him, Mr. Cushing.
Well, what'll I tell him?
Tell him you're happy to keep your date with him.
Is that a train in from Belhaven?
Just in, sir. Passengers coming along now.
Thank you. Oh, I made it. Ah, there she is. Kate!
Tony!
Oh, darling...
You kiss me like that and the whole town will see you.
I hope so. Kate, this holiday was endless.
I know, I thought so too. But I've got to talk to you.
Oh, sure. You always come back full of the old Belhaven hang-ups. All right, where shall we have lunch?
Tony, you never change.
Neither do you. I had every intention of asking you to dinner and having lunch with my boss, but it's no good. Kate, I've got to see you.
Here's a special invitation to every woman and child who's ever appeared in a Miss Clairol advertisement, print, television, or packaging. Miss Clairol and Woman's Day magazine cordially invite you to join us at a gala reunion to celebrate Miss Clairol's 25th anniversary. all former models, please contact Miss Clairol or Woman's Day at Box 333A, FDR Station, New York, New York, 10022. The search is on for former Miss Clairol models.
If I had a nickel for every minute I've spent in a dirty oven, scraping and scrubbing, oh, I'd be living in Fort Knox.
Well, there's a different way to clean your oven that's less work. The overnight way, with Mr. Muscle.
Oh, come on.
It's true. With Mr. Muscle, you just spray it on at night, and while you sleep, its self-scouring foam lifts up the grease and grime.
Really?
So next morning, you just wipe clean.
Well, Mr. Muscle really sounds like a good man to wake up to.
Faces of Love has been brought to you by Mr. Muscle, the oven cleaner that works the easy overnight way. This program comes to you from the Radio Playhouse. Studio presents the radio dramatization of William Makepeace Thackeray's classic novel, Vanity Fair, the story of the clever and charming adventuress, Becky Sharp. In a moment, our author, Mr. Thackeray. The Author Studio is brought to you by Four-Way Nasal Spray. Gives you the fastest decongestant possible.
Gentlemen, as you well know, I am William Makepeace Thackeray, author of Vanity Fair. But do you know this? An author needs great faith in the sympathy and understanding of his readers, or, as in this case, his listeners. Else he must hesitate to tell all which cries to be told, must loiter faint-heartedly on the fringes of truth. The personages in this novel are tossed in all directions, and I have faith that you will bear with them and me. So then, let us face today's chapter. Go backward, please, to Christmas Day, to an unrecorded conversation between Sir Pitt and his sister. Do you ask how Miss Crawley could take part after her overindulgence in liquid Christmas cheer? Fortunately, an enormous 2-hour Christmas dinner sufficiently sobered her.
Why are we to talk alone, Pitt? What have you to say that Rawdon and Rebecca cannot share?
That's what you're soon to hear, Matilda.
Already I have a notion what it is. And mark you this, I made a fast rule that no harsh words would be uttered in this household today.
I know.
Do not interrupt. But I promise you I shall break my own rule if you contrived this private conversation to badger me about Becky returning to Queen's Crawley.
Had another reason, but did mean to bring up Becky.
Don't.
Didn't you did?
So I did. And we'll put an end to the subject. I am not yet well enough for her to take her departure.
Hang it, if I may say this.
You mayn't. I presume you meant to say I appear in quite good health. I am not, sir. I forced myself to be brave and cheerful today for the sake of Christmas. When you and Rawdon leave, I trust that will be soon, I shall take to my bed, my aches, my pains, and my medicine.
Sorry you ain't well.
Of course you're sorry. So long as I am not, just so long are you without Rebecca.
Will ever you be well?
Take care, Pitt. Very close you are to harsh words. For shame on Christmas.
Don't bait me, Matilda. Don't bait me.
Or you'll defy me and take Rebecca back.
No, I'd not do that, no.
I know perfectly well you did not. There is always a legacy you hope will be yours when I am sick enough to die, which I am not at this time. Sorry to disappoint. Now, what other matter do you have to speak to me about?
Her ladyship.
Why on earth would you talk to me of Lady Crawley? You know how she bores me. What could you possibly say of her that would interest me?
You'll be interested well enough.
I don't care a button about her and don't care to talk of her on Christmas or any other day.
And likely be sorry for what you just said.
I said it perfectly cheerfully, not harshly. And I cheerfully ask if we can go on with this.
Lady Crawley is dying, Matilda.
Is what?
You heard.
Pitt! Well, you exaggerate. I know you do. Always, she's ill with something. She can't be dying.
I have it from the doctor. He ain't in any doubt. A day or two and she'll be gone.
Oh, what I said of her just now. Oh, why didn't you stop me? Why did you tell me at all? You know how I fear talk of dying.
I thought it my duty to tell. She's your sister-in-law.
Oh, Pitt, I beg you, do not ask I attend the funeral. I cannot bear funerals.
Don't ask it. Don't expect it. It will be private. Lady Crawley is no kith or kin. Bute will bury her at Queen's Crawley, and there's an end of it. But one thing else, Matilda. Until she's over, you're to say aught of this to Becky. Her ladyship, afore her mind went daft, wanted Becky not to worry for her. This is why I took you aside. Now do you understand, do you?
I do. I do. You will send me word of the end?
I will. After the funeral. Only then do you tell Becky.
As you have heard, my listeners, except for Becky, the world will not very greatly care when Lady Crawley is laid unwept in a vault full of strangers. But we have not heard the last of her. No, as you will shortly discover.
I sweep my floor and I still hear sugar underfoot. I hate that straw broom.
That's the kind of dirt straw brooms miss. But an Oceder angler broom would get it. Angler bristles are cut on an angle to keep more tips on the floor, and the tips are closer together. Oceder angler gets the dirt other brooms miss.
Oceder makes your life easier.
What do you hear from your floor?
No sound. Oceder makes your life easier.
Julie, I haven't had this in years.
John, you're doing fine.
Oh, poor kid.
5 minutes, Claude.
Let's sit down. We're meeting your father for dinner. How do I look?
You always look pretty.
Thanks, sweetheart.
Especially your hair. Mom, the class is starting.
Oh. Even when you can't hold up any longer, your hair can. With Finalnet. Finalnet is not an aerosol. There's no wasteful propellant. It's concentrated to hold your hair all day. Finalnet holds up longer than you do.
Now it is early morning, the Monday after Christmas. Becky sleeps, and sleeping dreams that a voice calls her name.
Rebecca! Rebecca! Rebecca!
The calling voice wakes her. But who has called? Giles? No, the trundle bed is empty. Already, Giles has gone below to fetch Becky's jug of hot water.
Who called? I know someone. Oh, a dream. Someone in the dream. Called and called, but who? Slipped away. Or was it a dream? Giles?
Oh, you're awake, Miss Becky. Did you call me before you went downstairs?
Oh, no, miss. 'Tis early for you to wake.
Yes, I dreamed, but the dream is gone. Only I keep hearing my name. Wait, it's coming back. Oh, it was a lovely dream.
Ah, you married Mr. Rawdon.
No, he wasn't in it. It was Lady Crawley.
Oh.
She called. Oh, my. She was young and beautiful, walking in a green pasture with many flowers. I wasn't there, but I could see her, and she called to me. I can still hear her.
Rebecca! Rebecca!
Giles, do you believe in dreams?
Oh, I do if they be happy. Not if they scare me out of my wits.
Oh, this was a happy one, so let us believe what it was saying. Lady Crawley is well and happier than ever I've seen her.
Her ladyship happy, miss? Don't seem hardly likely. She wasn't, never.
No, poor lady, she was... What are you seeing out the window?
A rider just come, tethering his horse out front.
Oh, not Rawdon so early.
No, ma'am, it looks like... Oh, it is! Simon from Queen's Crawley, he's coming to the door.
Is anyone else in the house away?
No.
Oh, then run down yourself and see why he's here. Run!
Simon brung two letters, Miss Betty. One from Sir Pitt, from Miss Crawley. t'other for you, from her lady.
Oh, I dream of her now she's here. How sweet. Oh, she's answering the letter I wrote. Give it her. Oh, dear, Miss Crawley's bell. The doorbell wakened her. Go across the hall and take us her Pitt's letter.
Yes, ma'am.
And say, I'll come myself as soon as I can.
I'll tell her.
Come in. Come in. Oh, it's you, Giles. Who on earth was clamoring at the door so early?
Oh, Simon, ma'am, from Queen's Crawley. He brung you a letter from Sir Pitt.
Oh, oh, dear.
Here, ma'am. Miss Becky says she'll be along as soon as she's washed her face and is into her dressing gown. You don't want to read your letter, Miss Crawley?
There's no need. I know what it says. Lady Crawley has expired.
Beg pardon?
Lady Crawley, dead.
Oh, no, ma'am. Simon brung a letter from her for Miss Becky.
Did he? Then what on earth can Sir Pitt be writing about? Ah, that she's better, of course. What an imbecile he is. So certain she was dying.
Miss Crawley?
Oh, Becky, you've a letter from her ladyship. She's better, is she?
Much better. Oh, very much and very happy. I would like to read it to you.
Do. Pitt's bad spelling can wait.
My very dear Becky, I write this letter
long before the day you receive it. When you hold it in your hand, I will be at rest. Be glad for me, dear Becky. I want no tears, for I go most willingly, asking one last gift from you who showed me so much kindness. Do not let my going stop your laughter. Do not wear a black ribbon. Do not weep or grieve. The light has been dim on earth for me, as I go now to the eternal light that shines somewhere in full beauty.
Lady, gentlemen, let us grant her ladyship's last wish. Not grieve, not weep. Tomorrow, may I expect you? You may certainly expect your servant, William Makepeace Thackeray.
Uncle Thaddeus, can I ask you something?
Don't ask for money.
It's this cold, Unc.
Nephew, you need four-way nasal spray.
Will it help?
Use as directed, four-way provides the fastest decongestant relief possible for stuffy noses and sinuses.
Unc, that's a blast. Is it expensive?
Ah, four-way costs a darn sight less than the leading brand. You can't buy faster relief at any price.
I'm going to get some four-way.
Maybe you've got a nose for business after all.
Hi, I'm trimming my little girl's hair. Mine was the same beautiful chestnut color once, before the grays started sneaking in. But I discovered Loving Care Color Lotion from Clairol. It covered my grays without changing my natural color. And it has no peroxide. Loving Care made my hair shinier and softer, too. Our hair looks almost alike now. Except mine has no bubble gum in it.
Loving Care Color Lotion from Clairol. It's good for your hair.
The Author Studio has been brought to you by Loving Care Color Lotion from Clairol. This program comes to you from the Radio Playhouse.
It's not nice to eavesdrop, but it's fun. So let's check in on the comedy of errors at the Baxters. On the Little Things in Life. Brought to you by Ban Roll-On, America's leading roll-on antiperspirant.
Well, I see Aunt Maggie has taken my crossword puzzle again.
Oh, for goodness sake, dear. Why do you let little things bother you so much?
I don't think it's such a little thing. I look forward to coming home at night, having dinner, and then sitting down, reading the paper, and then I wind it up by doing the crossword.
Aunt Maggie's had few enough things in her life. Do you think you're being a little selfish?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Just the same, I'd like my crossword. I wouldn't mind if she'd finish them, but she only gets about a quarter of it done anyway.
Well, then why don't you finish it?
I don't like doing crossword puzzles that somebody else has started, then erased, and the whole thing's a mess.
Oh, honey, I think she's coming downstairs. Now, don't say anything, please.
All right, all right.
Well, what are you two doing?
Oh, nothing, Aunt Maggie. Bob's reading the paper. I was just looking over some Christmas cards I hadn't opened.
I haven't heard you say anything about what you're doing New Year's Eve.
We never go out New Year's Eve. Oh. We always stay home. Too many drunken drivers on the road.
I think you're just staying home because I'm here.
Oh, no, Aunt May. Not at all. Peg's right. We always stay home New Year's Eve.
Oh, did you ask anybody to come over?
No.
No?
Most of our friends like to have parties or go to parties.
We decided some years ago we were going to stay home and just celebrate by ourselves. We turn on the TV at midnight and watch the crowds in Times Square.
Well, that is if we can stay awake till then. Sometimes we don't make it. We're both so sleepy we just go to bed early.
My goodness. You're both much too young to act like that. Even back in Montana, I always do something on New Year's Eve.
What do you do, Aunt Maggie?
Oh, I go over to Stella Niblett's house, and we play cribbage or hearts, and then at midnight we have a glass of wine.
Well, we'll stay up this year, don't worry. You can ask Maynard at me. We can play something. That'd be kind of fun. Oh, I'll get it.
No, I'll get it. I'm up.
It's a Christmas card we got from Barbara Miller. Goodness, I haven't written her yet either.
Well, for goodness sake, Maynard.
Maynard. Maynard, hi, come on in.
Oh, Maynard.
Hope I haven't interrupted anything.
No, not a thing. Just sitting here. It's nice to see you.
Let me take your coat, Maynard.
All right.
Like some coffee?
Well, sure, thank you.
You two want some more coffee? I'll get some cookies, too.
Fine, Aunt Maggie.
Won't take me a minute.
Wait a minute, Maggie. Something I'd like to ask you, which actually is the reason I dropped in instead of phoning.
Sit down, Maynard.
Oh, yeah. What's on your mind?
Well, I just had a call this evening from a friend of mine in New York. Well, no, that's not true. I called him. I thought maybe Maggie might like to have a real New Year's celebration this year.
My goodness, Maynard, what do you mean?
Well, I'll come right to the point, Maggie. How would you like to fly to New York, it's only an hour, and spend New Year's Eve dancing to Guy Lombardo?
Guy Lombardo? Guy Lombardo?
Guy Lombardo?
Maynard, Guy Lombardo's orchestra and his New Year's Eve party is booked up months ahead.
Yes, I know.
You couldn't possibly get reservations at the last minute.
Well, as a matter of fact, I used to know him.
You knew him? You knew Guy Lombardo?
Well, yes. I never mentioned this, but in my, salad days, I used to play a pretty hot trumpet. We were all pretty young then, but we've still kept in touch.
You know Guy Lombardo?
Well, yes. I went to school with him, high school. He's a very wonderful person and always keeps in touch with his old friends.
You mean you and Aunt Maggie would fly down to New York and then... and go to the New Year's Eve celebration?
Oh, that's the idea. That is, if Maggie would like to do that.
If I would like to? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my. Guy Lombardo. I have always just loved his orchestra. Always. Would I meet him? I mean, would I actually meet him?
Well, yeah, sure.
Oh, my. I wouldn't know what to say to him. What do you say to a celebrity?
Oh, Maggie,
he's a very nice person. Don't worry about what to say to him. Just say what you'd say to anybody.
Oh, no. I never met a real celebrity like that.
Oh, Maggie, don't worry. Celebrities are just people, you know.
Oh, my goodness. My. Meeting Guy Lombardo.
Well, I thought you might enjoy having a real New Year's Eve party while you're here in the East.
Oh, I should say. Oh, I better go fix the coffee and get out the cookies.
I'll come along with you to help. I think you'd enjoy it, Maggie. It'd be something different anyway.
Well, talk about hiding your light under a bushel. Did you have any idea that Maynard Blake knew Guy Lombardo?
What's so great about that?
Oh, come on, honey.
Oh, you women always get so excited about celebrities. As Maynard said, they're no different than anybody else.
Oh, yes, they are. Celebrities are exciting. I don't know why, but they are. I know they're just people, but it is fun to meet them, even to see them. Why do men always act as though it's nothing?
Because I don't see anything so great about meeting a celebrity.
I was just telling Maynard.
Yes?
Tomorrow, we'll have to go shopping for a dress.
Yes, dear, a long dress, and get your hair done, too.
And I'll have to get shoes and an evening bag.
Oh, I must have an evening bag you can borrow.
If you wanted to, Maggie, we could drive down early Wednesday. Maybe stop somewhere for lunch on the way.
Oh, yes, that sounds like fun.
Well, in fact, maybe you wouldn't have to buy a dress. Maybe I've got one that would look nice on you. Come on, let's go upstairs and look at Maggie. I have a black velvet I've only worn once.
Come black on. Velvet?
Yeah.
That sounds lovely.
It is.
But I need some dressy shoes.
Well, we'll have to get
Hey, what about our coffee?
Oh, I fixed it, but I forgot to plug it in.
Plug in the coffee, Maggie.
Yeah, I'll go get the cups and sauces. Are you two coming back down?
Yes, dear. We'll be right back down.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't it exciting?
Well, I don't like the print dress on you, Aunt Maggie. Anyhow, it's too summery. And I don't think the navy blue knit looks right at all.
No. I don't think I have enough in the front to fill it out, if you know what I mean.
It doesn't look right. How's the black velvet?
You want to zip me up in the back?
Sure. There's a jacket, too, you know, somewhere. I'll look in the closet again. How's that fit?
Well, I think it's a little tight, don't you?
No. Just look sexy.
Oh, sexy.
Yes, you do. See, I can't find the jacket. Oh, here it is. You want to slip it on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, no, there. Wrong sleeve. No. There you are.
Oh, yes. My, this is a beautiful dress. But I don't think I want to borrow it. I feel terrible if anything happened to it.
Oh, what could happen to it?
I could spill something on it.
Oh, nothing.
That's what always happens when you borrow somebody else's clothes. It never fails.
Oh, don't worry about that. Now, turn around. Let me look at you. Well, it's not bad, Aunt Maggie. It is not bad at all. What do you think?
Well, I don't think you ever feel very comfortable in someone else's clothes.
Yet. If you're going to worry about spilling something, will you forget it?
No, it isn't just that. Well, I really think I'd like to buy a new dress.
Well, it just seems like such an expense buying a long dress when you may just wear it once.
Well, yes, I suppose I will just wear it once.
No, I didn't mean it that way, Aunt Maggie. I just meant that's the trouble with everyone. You rush out to buy a long dress for some special occasion, then you never wear it again, you know, or once or twice.
Well, I just think, since this is the first time I'll be wearing a long dress on a date, if you know what I mean, a man.
Yes, I know what you mean. I think you're quite right. We'll get up early, we'll get into town, we'll start looking, but at least you've tried on my things, and in a pinch you can wear that black velvet, you know?
Yes. Well, I'd better take it off before something happens to it.
Oh, nothing's going to happen to it. Now, let me unzip you. What are you going to wear to travel in?
I thought I'd wear my salmon-colored knit suit. Mm-hmm. Or do you think my green would be better?
Well...
Or the navy blue? Oh, dear.
Look, we'll go in your room and look them over now.
I'll get my suitcase out and start putting in some things. You know, bathrobe and slippers and nightgown, things like that.
Fine. You've got 2 days, you know, to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know. I just... Imagine dancing to Guy Lombardo's orchestra on New Year's Eve.
I know.
Hey, what are you two doing up here? Maynard finally went on home.
Oh,
we finished our coffee and cookies.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. We forgot you've been trying on clothes.
Oh, I'd better call Maynard and apologize.
No, he understood. When women get their minds on clothes, they don't think of anything else.
We're going shopping tomorrow. Aunt Maggie wants to look for a new dress of her own. I wonder where you're going to be staying.
Well, Maynard said he'll make the hotel reservations, but he didn't say which hotel in New York, though.
Oh, dear. I never thought of that.
Never thought of what? What's the matter? What is it?
Well, I just never thought about going to a hotel.
Well, you have to sleep somewhere. You can't drive back that night.
But I can't walk into a hotel with Maynard.
Well, why not? You'll have separate rooms.
Well, of course. But what will the desk clerk think if I just walk in with Maynard? I mean, you know what he'll think.
Oh, and
Maggie, the desk clerk isn't going to think anything. What does he care anyway?
Well, I care, dear. I was going to write Stella back home tonight and tell her about going to New York and having New Year's Eve with Guy Lombardo's orchestra.
Well, that's fine. You can write everybody back home.
But Stella's going to ask where I stayed. Oh. I certainly can't tell her I went to a hotel with a man. But it'd be all over town.
Aunt Meg, you can tell Stella you stayed with friends of
ours.
I
don't like lying about things. Oh, dear. Maybe I shouldn't go.
Aunt Maggie, will you please stop worrying? You're going to go and you're going to have a wonderful time.
Oh, I don't know if I can dance anymore. It's been so long.
Well, you can waltz. Just dance when they're playing waltzes. You can brush up on your dancing tomorrow. We'll put on some records and you and Bob can dance around and practice a little.
Me? Well,
yes.
It's been so long since we've gone dancing that I don't...
That's for sure. Aunt Maggie, you go in and start packing your suitcase and make a list of what you want to take.
Well,
tomorrow we'll go shopping early now.
I'm going to do a little more thinking about it. At my age, I am certainly not going to ruin my reputation.
Oh, Aunt Maggie.
I'll talk to you about it in the morning. Good night.
Oh, honestly.
Well, now, wait a minute. She's got a point. We live in a small town, too, here. Everybody knows everybody else. What if they start gossiping about Aunt Maggie and Maynard Blake going off together?
Listen, this will be the highlight of her life, and Aunt Maggie is going if I have to go along as a chaperone. All right?
All right, honey. All right.
Do you think all antiperspirants are basically the same? Well, Ban Roll-On antiperspirant may just change your mind. Take effectiveness, for instance. Tests have shown that Ban Roll-On antiperspirant will actually help stop wetness better than most leading sprays. Make your own test soon. Pick up a bottle of Ban Roll-On, and you may discover what we've shown in tests. Ban Roll-On antiperspirant, proof that not all antiperspirants are created equal.
As anyone knows, hair is only as beautiful as the condition it's in. Natural Wear Miss Clairol shampoo formula conditions while it colors, makes your hair healthy looking and manageable while it adds natural glowing color that covers gray. And it's so easy to use. Just shampoo it in for fresh young color that stays color true week after week. For conditioning hair color, the best it can be, at any price, Natural Wear Miss Clairol, to know you're the best you can be.
The Little Things in Life with Peg Lynch and Bob Dryden and Margaret Hamilton as Aunt Maggie was written by Peg Lynch, directed by Warren Somerville, produced by Dick Cox and Peg Lynch, and has been brought to you by Loving Care Color Lotion from Clairol. I'm Charles Woods. This program comes to you from the Radio Playhouse.
To have and to hold. The story of the traditional vows, the new morality, and a people caught in the conflict between them. Brought to you by Four-Way Nasal Spray. Gives you the fastest decongestant possible.
Thank you, Miss Tatum, and a happy new year to you.
Ah, come on in, Jason. Weren't we going to meet at the club?
Yes, yes, we were, Dad, but I was in the neighborhood, so I thought I'd pick you up.
Oh, fine. How's the family?
They're all fine.
Emily, too?
Well, as long as she stays on her medication.
Now, what did that specialist, what's his name?
Dr. Szabo.
Yeah, what did he say?
Well, actually, nothing yet.
And I thought the legal profession took the deliberate speed prize. What's taking him so long?
Dad, he's being very thorough.
Well, you don't sound worried.
Well, he knows what he's doing, I'm sure.
And Jennifer seems to have made a complete recovery.
Just about. She has a little trouble with her coordination, but she's getting better every day.
You know, Caroline was saying she'd like to do something for that Dr. Gonzalez who saved Jennifer.
Yes, I wish I could think of something myself, Dad, but I'm afraid Joe Gonzalez looks upon it as routine. He was just glad he was in the right place at the right time with the information.
Saving a child's life after she's been underwater for 45 minutes, routine? What's his idea of a difficult case?
Dad, he's a very modest and yet very proud man, which is why Caroline probably won't be able to do more than say thank you.
Yeah, that should be more like him. When I think of all the egotistic wheeler-dealers there are...
Dad, please, what about a halt to all the hostilities during the holidays?
Come on, Jason, I know I'm right. Kurt Rogers is an opportunist.
Well, lots of people are.
This one happens to be married to your sister. And I can't understand why you're so unconcerned.
Well, because you're doing it for both of us. Now, look, Dad, Lynn loves them, and until she sees them differently or he does something to confirm your worst suspicions, I say hands off.
And I wish Lynn had the good judgment you had, or even Anne. And I wouldn't worry about her.
But when has she had a chance to learn?
Oh, I guess you're trying to tell me something.
Dad, every time she got into any kind of a mess when she was little, you'd always fix it up for her. You'd always bail her out.
But Lynn would look at me with those big blue eyes filled with tears.
Yes, Dad, I know, I know. She learned very early that you were a pushover.
Robert can't say no to Lynn. You know that, Angela.
I wonder why parents think they're being so kind when they won't discipline their children.
I think they're afraid to, and then they have to turn it into a virtue. Hey, I'm getting hungry. Are you ready to order yet?
In a minute. You know, this is my first leisurely lunch in weeks. I don't want to rush it.
Angela, do you like being a nurse?
Of course I do, Anne. I don't think you could be a nurse if you didn't really, well, really love it.
I wish there were something I really wanted to do.
Well, you paint.
I'll never be great. Oh, so listen, tell me, how's your sister?
Well, I don't know how Emily is, to be honest with you. She's been so involved with Jennifer ever since the accident. It's almost as though she was wound up. And there's been Christmas.
Robert, and Mother, too, were saying she doesn't look well.
You know, I can't understand Jason's planning to take her on a long trip to Hawaii.
He is.
That was his Christmas present to her.
I thought maybe sending Helen Anthony packing was his Christmas gift.
Oh? Did you see something there, too?
Oh, a little, I think. Mother was more suspicious. She couldn't understand how Emily could be so friendly with Jason's ex-girlfriend, as she called her.
Well, I don't know what Helen's game was, or truly even if she had one, but I couldn't help but feel she was all set to start up with Jason again.
Did he think so?
Oh, I doubt it very much.
Well, she certainly left in a hurry.
And I hope she stays away.
Uncle Thaddeus, can I ask you something?
Don't ask for money.
It's this cold, Unc.
Nephew, you need four-way nasal spray.
Will it help?
Used as directed, four-way provides the fastest decongestant relief possible for stuffy noses and sinuses.
Unc, that's a blast. Is it expensive?
Nah, four-way costs a darn sight less than the leading brand. You can't buy faster relief at any price.
I'm going to get some four-way.
Maybe you've got a nose for business after all.
This is what aerosol hairspray sounds like. This is what FinalNet sounds like. The big difference in the way they sound is the big difference in the way they work. FinalNet is not an aerosol. It's concentrated to give you a great long-lasting hold. There are no wasteful propellants. That makes it economical, too. 8 ounces of FinalNet go as far as 24 ounces of aerosol hairspray. You get a great hold at a great price. FinalNet. The first sensible alternative to aerosol hairspray.
Were there any messages for me?
Yes, Dr. Carter. Dr. Foster was looking for you. Do you want me
no,
to
No, thank you. I'll call him from my office.
Oh, and Miss Fairchild asked when you would be back from lunch.
Oh, well, you can tell her I'm here. This is Dr. Carter. Would you please page Dr. Marshall Foster for me? I'm in my office. God. I wonder how much longer Marsh and I can put off telling Emily about the diagnosis. I sure hated having to lie to Dad, too. Well, after the New Year's. Well, maybe while Emily and I are on the trip. Oh, that's a hell of a time. Hello. Oh, hi, Marsh. No, I haven't told her. Marsh, I know. Yes, I know. All right, we'll talk about it, but that's all we'll do. All right, goodbye. Oh, come in, Angela.
Why, Jason, what's the matter?
Nothing, why?
Well, you look worried.
Well, as head of medical services, I have a right to that look.
What is it, the budget or the board?
Oh, some of each, I guess.
Jason, have you seen Marsh?
I just talked to him on the phone.
Well, he's been avoiding me, I'm sure.
Well, that's not like him, is it?
Not exactly. But he knows what I want him to do.
Oh, what's that?
Call Dr. Szabo. Get him off the dime on Emily's diagnosis.
Angela, I'm sure Marsh is in touch with him.
Well, I think he tries to give that impression. He says he has a call into him, and then when I ask him later what he heard, he says he was out when Szabo returned his call.
Well, they're both very busy doctors.
Well, I can't understand why you aren't after Dr. Szabo, Jason.
Angela, I have a lot to do, and I can't waste my time and his. Szabo will let him know when he has something to tell him.
Waste your time? Don't you know what this is doing to Emily?
Well, what's the matter now?
Oh, Jason, can't you tell she's worried? She's worrying herself to death, and she's trying to hide it from you.
Poor little things. They're hungry, Robert. Here.
Well, if they'd fly south, as any self-respecting, hard-working birds would do, they'd be in Florida by now.
Oh, they know there's a feeding station here. There always has been at River Run.
You know, Caroline, you're creating a strain of lazy, freeloading birds.
Oh, I love to have them around.
Oh, come on, dear. I'm freezing.
All right. You know, the feed's almost gone. I'll have to ask Hodges to get some more. Oh, wipe your feet, dear.
Well, that fire needs some feeding, too.
There we go.
Well, it's almost dinner time, isn't it?
Well, I'm glad you thought of me.
Oh, darling, you sound so deprived.
I am, but not for long. Your usual, Sherry?
Yes, dear.
Where are Lennon Kirk?
At the guest cottage.
Did he go into town at all today?
I don't think so.
You know, I wonder if he's really trying to establish himself in a business.
Well, he expects to hear from all those Swiss manufacturers, you know, those marvelous sweaters they do.
Yes, and ever since their representative went back to Zurich, he's been in a blue funk.
Well, maybe after the holidays.
Caroline, do you think Lynn's happy with him?
Well, has she said anything to you?
No, she hasn't.
Well, then, leave them alone, Robert. Lynn is trying very hard to make a go of this marriage. She doesn't want to fail again.
Well, the first one wasn't her fault. Bill didn't want children.
Whatever the reason, Lynn's trying to make a life of her own now. And your fussing and clucking over her isn't helping her any.
Me? Fussing and clucking? Well, you make me sound like a mother hen.
Yes, dear.
How do you get the most out of an antiperspirant? The answer may be using Ban Roll-On. Tests have shown that Ban Roll-On helps stop wetness better than most leading sprays. And Ban Roll-On costs about the same, yet lasts longer than most 5 or 6 ounce sprays. Averaging 2 seconds of spray per application each side each day, the longest lasting of the leading antiperspirant sprays gives you 37 days of protection. On the average, Ban Roll-On will give you 51 days. That's 38% longer. Ban Roll-On. Why settle for less?
In my house, we've got a fully automatic kitchen. Me. And the worst job I've got to do is scrape and scrub that dirty oven.
Well, there's a different way to clean your oven that's less work. The overnight way, with Mr. Muscle.
Promises, promises.
It's true. With Mr. Muscle, you just spray it on at night, and while you sleep, its self-scouring foam lifts up the grease and grime.
That's a good idea.
So next morning, you just wipe clean.
You know, I've got a feeling that Mr. Muscle's going to be a good man to wake up to.
To have and to hold has been brought to you by Final Net. Gives your hair a great, long-lasting hold. This program has come to you from the Radio Playhouse, a DCA Productions program.